Hello and welcome to a new edition of RAI Argentina to the World in English. This is the foreign service of Argentina's public national radio, broadcasting from the city of Buenos Aires via the shortwaves of WRMI, Miami Radio International, on the frequency of 5800 kilohertz. You can also listen to our programs via internet. Just go to our website, rai.com.ar, and if you're online, you can also check out our YouTube channel, RAI Argentina, with original content in 8 languages produced by Argentina's international radio broadcaster. My name is Fernando Farias, and I'm bringing you this weekly edition of our show in English that remains a weekly program rather than a Monday through Friday for what's been going on throughout practically this entire 2020. That's to say, the coronavirus pandemic. RAI became radio operating remotely with everybody working from home, as it is the case of this program that I'm broadcasting from my home studio in the neighborhood of Montserrat. And we haven't been broadcasting from the traditional historic building of Maipú 555 here in the center of Argentina's capital because of the pandemic. Speaking of the pandemic, the latest trend is that the new cases and contagions are going up outside the Buenos Aires metropolitan area, the area we call AMBA, A-M-B-A, the metropolitan area of Buenos Aires, the most populated area surrounding the Argentine capital, Buenos Aires City, where practically a third of Argentina's population of 42 million people live. For several months, this was the main hotspot of the pandemic, and more than 90% of cases were located in this part of the country. And for that reason, other parts of Argentina were relatively quiet with regard to the pandemic, with many activities open that are unthinkable in Buenos Aires, such as gyms and restaurants. But for the past 5 weeks, the trend has been reversed, and Buenos Aires is in a plateau with a slight downward trend of cases. And the rest of the country is in a much worse situation, with cases going up, occupied intensive care beds, and this is where most of the new cases are located now. 60% of new daily confirmed cases are outside Buenos Aires, and Argentina is now in the top 5 of confirmed cases in the global top 5, below the US, Brazil, India, and Mexico also. Well, Argentina's in that top 5 of confirmed cases. It's doing much better in the global deaths ranking, with over 22,000, which is still a lot. Well, regarding today's program, we're going to be bringing something back from our archives. A very, very good interview that I conducted back in 2012 in the context of the 30th anniversary of the Malvinas War. I talked to an Argentine veteran of the war, Miguel Savage, who's perfectly fluent in English. In fact, his very surname suggests an English background, and he does indeed speak English. It was a very, very good interview, and we're going to be sharing it with you during today's program. So, here we go.
Continuing with our series on the 30th anniversary of the Malvinas War. We are with a veteran from that conflict, Miguel Savage, who's in Venado Tuerto, the province of Santa Fe. First of all, thank you very much for this contact, Miguel.
Hello, Fernando. Good morning.
Good morning. So, Miguel, I wanted to focus on if that's okay with you, on the personal experience, because, well, especially from the point of view of a 33-year-old Argentine, we all know what's in the history books, but unfortunately, we don't hear very much from the accounts of the veterans, and I don't know why. So, for me, and also obviously for the audience, what did you remember from, let's say, 2 months, 3 months before April the 2nd, 1982? How was your life? What were you doing?
Well, that's a very good question, Fernando. The first thing I have to say is that we, the Argentine conscripts, we weren't professional soldiers. We were students, we were working class, doing our military service during the dictatorship. So we weren't soldiers by choice. That's one of the huge differences with us and maybe the British soldiers, the professional soldiers. So I was finishing my military service. I had 10 days for the final leave, and April the 2nd came, and that changed my life completely.
You were 10 days away from going back home?
Yes, just 10 days. I was going to resume my studies. I was going to study agronomy in La Plata, and I played tennis. I had a girlfriend. I had a normal life to live, and April the 2nd changed it completely. I'm a different person. I'm a survivor. I don't know what would have been.
You don't call yourself a veteran, but a survivor.
Yeah, I present myself as a survivor, and I think that in cherishing the simple things in life, that's my main strength, my main message, the principal message I like to convey to people, to enjoy simple things.
Carpe diem.
Yeah, enjoy the simple living. Yeah, correct.
So on April, they say you received like a letter or you were summoned to the barracks. What can you tell me about that day in particular?
I got a telephone call to be in 1 hour at the regiment.
And you had no clue of what was...
No, I suppose we were going to just be there and while the others went to war, because I just had 1 day rifle practice. I had no proper training, so I was relaxed. I think they can't be sending me.
You were about to finish the conscription, but you didn't have any military training. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, correct. I just had 1 day rifle practice. This had occurred 14 months before in the basic training. And then I spent the rest of the 14 months in an office.
Yeah, administrative work, paperwork, nothing to do with guns and...
Nothing to do with infantry.
And then all of a sudden you were sent to the front. Is that just like that? I just can't believe that.
No, I ended up at the foot of Mount Longdon, one of the bloodiest battle of the Malvinas-Falklands War.
Wow.
We had to face the paratroopers, the three paras, the best regiment in the world at that time.
Yeah, and you arrived on the islands on April the 2nd, the very first day of the...
No, we arrived about 10 days later.
Okay, but airborne or
shipped? We went by plane, yes.
And obviously you were scared.
We were just... At the beginning, yeah, scared and not believing that they were sending us. I couldn't believe it. It was like there must be some kind of mistake here, or maybe they're using us as an act of presence, of military presence, and maybe they'll negotiate with the British. We never imagined the hell we were going to go through.
Wow, and that you would say that was the feeling among most of your comrades in arms.
Yeah, we were just, the first week we were, yeah, it was a bit funny, yes, first planes flying, and it was funny, but then when they started bombing us, it stopped being funny, and it became a very, very painful and excruciating experience.
So, were there only conscripts or people in your position? Was there really any true military muscle deployed on the islands during those days that you could say that you could rely on and say, okay, well, when these guys show up, or it was just conscripts?
No, basically conscripts. Our company, 150 men, we had about maybe 5 or 6 officers and about 15 or 20... less officers. We just had 2 or 3 officers and about 10 NCOs. The rest were civilian conscripts.
Taking you back from 82, and have you got any idea why was that? I mean, is there any explanation for this from the military strategic point of view?
Well, I have my conclusion. They used us as a kind of effect to produce the effect for the British not to come. The thing is, and then we were supposed to leave. The thing is that when Galtieri got all this nationalistic support in Plaza de Mayo, everybody with the jingoism going on at that time, I think he found it difficult to bring us back. So he just said, "Well, let's carry on with this story."
But why didn't they send trained soldiers to the islands?
That's really incredible, because at that time in Argentina, the dictatorship, there was plenty of professional soldiers, commandos, all over the place. They would have won Mount Longdon if they had sent professional soldiers.
It makes complete sense. They were ruling the country. They had all the resources at their disposal, and yet they didn't send the best they have to the front?
Yeah, that's the same question the British soldiers ask me still today.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They say, well, Maggie Thatcher was talking real business. She sent the best she had, and we sent just students.
On the ground, I assume, because I hear that the Air Force did a pretty decent job.
Yeah, the Argentine Air Force, with some planes that had electrical problems, still and bombs that weren't the correct bombs. They used bombs for targets on Earth instead of they went through the aluminium ships. But they did an incredible job. They nearly won the war just with the Air Force.
Miguel, where exactly were you deployed on the islands?
I was at the foot of Mount Longdon. That's about 10 kilometers away from Stanley, Puerto Argentino.
Okay, that's the place where you stayed all of your tour to the islands.
Yes, I spent 60 days there, huddled in a peat bank, starving. We had no food, we had no solid food. We just had
soup.
Yeah, a very liquid kind of soup and mate, a bitter herbal tea during the morning. Never bread, never biscuits, nothing.
And was there any, explanation for that? No supplies. Why?
That's also very difficult to explain. They had all the food in sheds in the village. So after the first week of starving, we just abandoned our position and went to steal food, our own food, from the sheds.
On your own? You just broke ranks.
Yes. We picked the rainy days when the officers were sleeping in the tents, and we just escaped from to steal food. The thing is, when we were caught, we were brutally punished.
By your officers?
By our own officers, yeah. That was another horrible thing that happened. Of course, they used the methods of torture they had learned.
Yeah, they had been applying on the ground, the continent.
Yeah, applying during the 70s.
Yeah. You would try to steal food from the surrounding farms and houses of the islanders there?
Yes, also. I also did that, yes.
And you came in contact with them?
Yeah, there's a very nice story about a patrol I had to go with as an interpreter. We were sent to a farm to search the house.
That was at the end. Searching for guns, or sent you for...
Yeah, they sent me with a gun that worked. My gun didn't work. So we went to a house, we searched it, and I searched it. I started screaming in English. You know, is there anybody here? We just want to talk, and we leave. Fortunately, there was nobody in the house. And I remember, I have very fond memories of that. Of that day, the house was like, of course, we were starving, we were wet, we were cold, we were shivering.
And your gun didn't work?
My gun didn't work, and we had been very badly treated for 2 months. So suddenly I was in this beautiful house, very neat, very very comfy, homely place.
Cozy.
Cozy, yes. Although even the smells were like my mum's house or like my grandmother's house. So it was like connecting with the family, you know. And I remember I stole a pullover, which I kept for 25 years, and
you mean a jersey, a piece of clothing there?
Yes, an English pullover, very nice, very with a lovely perfume. I remember smelling that and connecting with my mum. And when I left the farm, I said I'm going to come back one day and I'm going to say thank you to these people. I felt some kind of protection inside that house. I felt compassion towards the people, to all the islanders. I felt sorry for myself. I said, when is this going to end? But at the same time, I felt stronger. I remember I had some Quaker oats and some butter I found around. I felt stronger, and I felt like was somebody in the house telling me, take all this stuff, and you're going to survive, Michael, and you'll be
back
home. You
got to tell the story.
You'll be back home soon. This was the 8th of June. The battle was the 11th. On the 14th, the surrender. So my feeling in the house wasn't...
So you didn't engage in a combat situation until the very final days with that, maybe the worst battle, which is Mount Langdon. Or you had previously encountered the British forces.
No, we had been bombarded during a month. But from the ships, and we had also attacks from the Sea Harriers that passed very, very close in recent flights over our heads. But the encounter was the 11th, the night of the 11th to 12th. And this patrol I was mentioning, we passed very, very near the entire 3-para regiment that was ready to attack us. This was the 8th. And the attack was the 11th, 3 days later. So they didn't shoot us because they wanted to keep the surprise element of their own attack.
How was that battle? I mean, was there any chance, or was just
well? It was the Paras lost 23 soldiers that night and about 80 wounded. It was the British regiment with most casualties. And our regiment, the 7th Regiment of La Plata, also is the Argentine regiment with most casualties. We lost 36 and about 120 wounded. But it was absolutely crazy, with transmission during the night, freezing cold, full moonlight, no wind.
Was there any? I mean, like a command coming from your officers, or was just like blind shooting and?
No, yeah, it was crazy. It was so noisy you couldn't even hear anything.
I see. Miguel, I know this is going to be, maybe you may think that this is going to be a stupid question, but is there anything good? Is there anything positive that you brought back from those islands?
Well, yes. The first thing I said about being a survivor, your perspective in life suddenly changes. I came back I was 19. I had lost 20 kilos, but I was very mature. I had very clear what my life was going to be. And secondly, also the experience of coming back with the British soldiers on the Canberra, the ship that brought us back to Patagonia. You know, it was like a sociological experiment.
Why is that?
What happened on the ship? Because we thought we would be angry with the British soldiers, and they also thought they wanted to throw us
over the sea.
To the sea, but But when we exchanged experiences, we became friends. And that was another lesson I learned during the war. If you have a human exchange, fighting a faceless enemy would be impossible, no? I think that if you put people of different countries with political problems, if you put them to live like in a hotel or in a ship or anything, to live together for a week, there would be never a war again.
Yeah. I mean, they have no option but to coexist.
The thing is about war. It's about pride. It's about not knowing the other person. I think, for example, what's happening now, 30 years on, with the islanders and the Argentines, they don't know each other. They don't speak. That's why there's still some kind of animosity, which would disappear with a normal situation.
Yeah, what I've learned from my very short experience dealing or discussing this issue is that we know very little, very, very little from each other, and we don't even comprehend or try to appreciate the other points of view.
That's the problem, Fernando, about people building walls. I'm kind of a person that likes to build bridges instead of walls.
That is, I totally agree with that. So, how are you 30 years on? How this anniversary finds you today?
Well, it's quite a moving day. I tend to be alone. I go to walk to the countryside with my dogs, relax. I don't go to any political thing. It's a very sensitive date.
Did you make many friends there? Or you lost friends there?
Yes. I lost friends. I made friends. I made friends from the islands, also British soldiers, everybody.
Yeah. Well, Miguel, this was really heartening and was a great contribution to the show. First time where you and Alejandro have provided us with an account, a first-hand account of the war in English, of course, which is the language of this service. So I really, really appreciate this.
Okay, I'm very glad I helped in any way. So a big hug to you, Fernando. So bye-bye.
Thank you very much, Miguel. That was Miguel Savage, 30 years after he was on the islands as a conscript.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that interview as much as I enjoyed back then conducting it. It was one of the best interviews I had in my life, and it was one of the first accounts by Argentine veterans of the war in English, because obviously there are not so many that are able to speak that well as Miguel. And Alejandro Meringer, another veteran who talked to me back then in 2012, and in the future we're gonna be bringing back that interview as well from our archives. You're listening to RAI, Argentina to the World. This is the Foreign Service of Argentina's public national radio, broadcasting from Buenos Aires via WRMI, Miami Radio International, on the frequency of 5800 kilohertz, also via rai.com.ar. This is the show for October 16, 2020. And very recently, it made the news around the world, the passing of guitarist Eddie Van Halen at the age of 65. Suddenly, he was an influence to musicians, especially rock musicians, and particularly guitarists around the world. And, you know, Van Halen, speaking of the Malvinas War, was the first band from the Northern Hemisphere, the first international band, so to speak, that came to Argentina after the Malvinas War. During the conflict, the dictatorship banned English language music via radio, via TV, soon the ban was lifted and approve of the change in the political climate is the visit by Van Halen to Buenos Aires in February 1983. It was the first, as I said, the first band to come after the war. They came to Argentina as part of the Hide Your Sheep World Tour, in which they were supporting their Diver Down album of 1982. Here in South America, they played gigs in Venezuela, Brazil, Uruguay, and in Argentina, in Buenos Aires, at the Obras Sanitarias Stadium, two dates. And there are numerous clips available on YouTube, because the national TV channel, ATC called back then, broadcast the show that was, as I said, performed at the Obras Sanitarias Stadium of Buenos Aires. Let's listen to a little bit of that. This is Van Halen, Buenos Aires, February 1983. Running with the Devil. Live in Buenos Aires, February 1983. And there you have it, Running with the Devil, live in Buenos Aires, back in February 11, 1983, as part of their South American tour to support their album Diver Down. They came to Buenos Aires, and well, we just played a little bit of Van Halen in Buenos Aires to remember the great Eddie Van Halen, who passed away recently at the age of 65. After struggling several years with cancer. Okay, and this way we're coming to the end of this edition of RAE Argentina to the World in English, that you can listen via WRMI and also via internet on rae.com.ar. Remember that we are receiving reception reports, we are replying reception reports sent by the Xers, with a special QSL card that we have issued on the occasion of the centenary of Argentine radio broadcasting that we are marking and remembering throughout this year 2020. If you want to get this special QSL card, send us your reception report to qslrai@gmail.com. I'm Fernando Farias. This was RAE Argentina to the World in English. Thank you for listening. Hasta la próxima.